everybody. This is William Del Pilar, and this is Points on the Board, where sports and politics collide like peanut butter and chocolate to create Reese's Buttercups. I am here with my co-host, Mr. Bill Ross, and tonight we are going to debate young quarterbacks. Does the NFL have a development program? But first, transgenders in the news. Again, San Jose State University volleyball is in the news again for retaliating against an assistant coach who filed a Title IX complaint. And then we're going to move on to the truth is out. Olympic gold medal boxer. I have to scroll down here, people. Boxer Iman Khalif. Got to give some respect to the name. Iman Khalif. The poor thing had his medical records leaked, which is wrong. But in having that leak, we found out the truth. Is Khalif male or female? We have the answer. So, Mr. Bill, how have you been doing?
I've been doing great.
Big night for you last night, wasn't it?
Oh, it was a wonderful night. Great night.
Bill's a man of few words tonight, isn't he?
Well, it couldn't have gone any better for me. I'm just happy to be here.
There you go. Bill, we have not talked since the World Series, I don't think.
No.
What are your thoughts of the Dodgers? Bill is a big baseball fan. He's right now in the minor leagues. Since we got somebody who's going to do our baseball podcast, or Bill will be doing it. That's why I said he's in the minor leagues or on deck. Our baseball guy has struggled with a family issue, so we're getting him time to recover. But Bill, as a baseball guy, what are your thoughts to the Dodgers taking it 5-1?
Well, I mean, the Dodgers just have have it all in every position. I mean, and they, Freddie Freeman, without him, it could have gone a completely different way. But, he just had the magic bat for the series. And they have all the other all-stars, right? But, you get one guy who gets hot like that, and he carries them for a little while, and then other people catch up and they contribute. And, they have a huge payroll. It's not a surprise that they, they're in the World Series. I'm a Yankee hater, so I love the 5 games. I'll take a 4-game sweep. But, and then you have the Yankees who have a huge payroll and they just didn't produce. Their guys just didn't come through, and they would do something when it didn't matter later in the game when it was over already. But they just they got cold. They got cold. Freeman got hot, and with a number of other Dodgers, pitching held up. So that's the way it goes in a series like that.
You're absolutely right. I could imagine. And I'm sure you remember, we're probably similar in age. Imagine if that was George Steinbrenner in the press box. Boy, that manager would have been, his head would have exploded. It is what it is. The Yankees are like the Cowboys for me. They need to play well because I hate them. Yeah. So when these teams you hate play crappy, it kind of takes the joy out of hating them away. So it was a great Yankees loss. I'm not a big Dodgers fan either because their payroll is hard to pay for. But can you believe Freeman? Is it Freeman? Freddie Freeman?
Yeah.
How? I'm like, why is the name so familiar? Because I don't follow baseball anymore. And when the 1991 strike came, before that, I knew everything about the box scores and everything. As soon as that 91 strike came, I was like, screw y'all. I've never gone back. But that said, I do remember Freddie Freeman. Did he have an issue with the Braves? They just were too cheap or something?
Yeah, I mean, he wanted to stay there, I believe, and they just couldn't work a deal out, and so he ended up, with L.A. He's just an upstanding guy, great locker room guy from what I hear. Obviously, I'm not in the locker room with him, but from what you hear and what's written, just an all-around all-star. He brought back the Kirk Gibson days. I mean, I know everybody's seen the highlights and the replay of the home run. He's got a bad ankle and the grand slam to win. He's one of the, what's nice about him, he's just got a great attitude, looks at the game the right way. He's a great role model. He just has it all. So it's great to see a guy like that compete and excel at that level in the World Series.
No, it is. It is. And, that's what you want on your team. So why they let him walk, I don't know. But to the audience, Do not forget to like, share, and most importantly, subscribe to this podcast. And you're probably watching us on YouTube, Rumble, or listening to us on Apple, watching us on Spotify. I forget Spotify has both capabilities, as well as we are on Pandora, and you can watch us at grumblingsmedia.com. All right, Bill. San Jose State University volleyball team attacks assistant coach when universities attack tonight on Fox Network. Y'all don't remember that back in the 90s when Fox started. Every show was when animals attack, when this attacks, that attacks. Yeah. Well, in this case, once again, they're in the news with their transgender volleyball team. Transgender volleyball, but that's so wrong. With their volleyball team that is in the news because of a transgender player. So the San Jose State University assistant women's volleyball coach, her name is Melissa Beatty Smooths. She filed a Title IX complaint against the university for allowing a transgender athlete, Blair Fleming, to play on the women's team. How did you talk to, is it Quillette? Quillette, it's a company called Quillette out there, Quillette. They had a groundbreaking article. It was long. It was a long read, extremely detailed. It's one of these whistleblower type articles. It's well worth a read to the audience. 48 hours after they reported on her Title IX complaint in an in-depth story that broke it down from every angle, San Jose State University, in my opinion, abused their power, played bully, played we're going to scare you, we're going to threaten you, we're just going to bully you, and suspended her, which is, in my opinion, retaliation against a whistleblower. This demonstrates how institutions may use forceful measures to enforce compliance. This is very common in power positions, ranging from how a man may treat a woman to how a university may treat an assistant coach to how a job may treat an employee to how Bill treats his daughter. I'm bad. Yes. So the Johnson West Conference is aware of the complaint and has initiated an investigation. One note before I get to Bill and his thoughts on this. The legacy media outlets I discovered in researching the story, they don't report that Blair Fleming is a transgender, man who identifies as a woman who went through the transition process, of my knowledge. But they don't do that. Again, it's no different than traditional legacy media politics. They lie to cover up something so they can control the narrative. Bill, your thoughts on Ms. Smooth being suspended? Am I just looking at it wrong? Is it legit that they suspend them? Are they bullying her? What are your thoughts on this?
No, I mean, I think it's, you can call it bullying. It's inappropriate. I don't think that they should be suspending her. They have a problem here that they're not addressing. So take the coach, the head coach, the assistant coach. I'm trying to remember the girl's name who is the co-captain.
Brooke Sessler.
Yeah. Okay. You take her, you take the other players, right? And the majority of the players don't feel comfortable with the other athlete, Fleming. And then you have the coach who is their safe space, right? Because the head coach, if they go to the head coach, I'm sure they're getting the signal that if you're going to complain or talk to me about this, you're going to lose your time or you will have something happen to you, right? I'm positive that's happening. So they talk with the assistant coach more. She speaks up. So the real problem is they have a guy who's a woman on the team and they're doing nothing about it. And it's sort of the elephant in the room, so to speak, right? So now the when the woman speaks up, they immediately suspend her. And, you know, I mentioned this to you before. You know, San Jose State settled a lawsuit a couple years ago because they failed to address complaints by female athletes with a male trainer, in 2021. So they seem to have some issues there in the athletic department. I'm not going to say that it's the same athletic director, but Title IX, they have an issue with it, I guess, in actually implementing it. But so I don't think it's inappropriate. It's not right to have her suspended at all. I think they need to really get down to the nitty gritty and look at what the problem is. And the problem is most of the team doesn't want to play with the girl or guy who's pretending to be a girl, and doesn't feel comfortable. The head coach is doing nothing. He's actually not acting like a head coach, because you should be getting in front of this to help the team get together, perform, work together, and then also the other coaches on the team. So he's failing. The school's failing. The athletic department's failing. And the only one who's not failing is the assistant coach, and they suspended her. So, you know, I mean, let's get real, guys. I mean, and girls and men and women, whatever it might be. I mean, that's really the way – that's really what it is. She's the only one who hasn't failed, and she's the one who's suspended.
That's absolutely correct. And for the audience, that is Blair Fleming there, is a biologically male player on the San Jose State volleyball team there, who identifies as female. She leads a team in set play, kills, which is the dangerous part, and in blocks. And San Jose's official policy requires Fleming's gender identity to be treated as superseding her biological sex. I mean, it's like, my God, at what point are you going to see a 6'8" male say, I identify as a woman, I'm going to play on a women's basketball team, and then they make it in the NCAA tournament? The way the NCAA is set up, that can't happen. You can see one of these marginal teams all of a sudden playing in the women's tournament. It's coming, people. Mark my words. So, Melissa Bates Smooth, again, as Bill noted, she is associate head coach. Where'd that picture of her go? You know, she's been around the block. She's got experience in this. As Bill says, she's a safety valve, a safe space for these women, these young girls. And they have, what, maybe 18 to 20 some odd girls on that team. And I think most of them, 2/3, 90% of them, they want her there as someone to talk to. Her declaration is 32 pages. It's a sworn declaration filed October 29th. It was submitted to the school and the Mountain West Conference and the NCAA. So her lawyer probably submitted it to all three organizations. And in essence, she's just saying it's favoritism towards Fleming at the expense of 18 female teammates. And the alleged favoritism towards transgender athletes, suppression of concerns from female athletes. That's similar to the Leah Thomas issue, where a man, Leah Thomas is a man, people. Leah Thomas is not transitioned. He just says, I'm a man, and he's in that locker room with that schlong swinging back and forth. Whoosh, 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 whoosh. And the women have to sit there and take it, and they have to look at it. You know, trust me, women. As a man, I'll tell you, okay, schlong's not the most attractive thing to look at. And to throw it in the face of women is wrong. It's when Bill and I were kids, as we were talking before we came on camera, we would have been arrested. You know, boy, what you doing? You know, that's allowed. Now, it's different in terms of Blair Fleming, but the concept is still the same. Creating a space that is uncomfortable for everyone. You know, there are potential Title IX violations. This is the hits in her argument. San Jose says, no, we're in compliance with Title IX based off the law. Where the women are looking at Title IX in terms of what it says. They go, no, you are not in compliance. So the courts will decide that eventually. And as Bill said off camera, we have a new administration coming in with President-elect Donald Trump. And he has vowed that he will do something about this. What he can or can't do, I don't know. But the pressure from the Oval Office is great. Especially when federal funding is concerned, especially when it appears that Trump's party will control both houses. So something can happen from the highest echelons of power. She alleges intimidation and silencing the players, impact on team dynamics, concerns about fairness in women's sports. As I just said to Bill a few seconds ago, you will have a man claiming at 6'8", I feel like a woman today. Ooh, WNBA is calling. I'm playing college. It's coming. So the main issue here is safety and fairness concerns. I'm not going to show you the video again. It's out there. But we have seen a kill shot take a girl out. It damaged her. Not only gave her massive concussions, she's had brain trauma. She forgets things. She cannot play volleyball. She's also does something else sports-wise. She can't do that. It's bleeped her up. You know, because you get hit with a ball going 60, 70 miles an hour, even in a volleyball, boom in the head, your brain's going to get rattled around that school. That's why that's what a concussion is. So that's the major issue. And There have been incidents of injury already caused by Fleming. An opponent was knocked to the ground by a kill shot in last October, and a similar incident towards a University of Delaware player. And some defenders on Fleming's own team reportedly turned away during practice due to safety concerns. Before we get to the legal implications, Bill, what are your thoughts on some of the – first of all, I think there are legit issues, and you think so too based on what you said. But what are your thoughts on the safety and fairness concerns? Is that something that some people say, oh, you're just overblowing that, William? Or the odds of that happening are slim to none, William. I'm like, if that happens once, that's enough. Your thoughts?
Well, I mean, the safety concern, I mean, first of all, it's a big issue because men and women don't compete against each other because of the advantages men have over women on, you know, with ability. And it's not to say that women don't have amazing athletes when they're playing together, but we don't play against each other. We play in our pools, our like pools, right? So it is a huge concern. And there's one thing about, you know, Title IX too, if I might. If we have just 1 second, Biden and Harris changed Title IX to include LGBTQ, W, X, Y, Z, 3, 4, 5, but it doesn't pertain to athletics. So what's interesting is it was in April where they changed that on campus to incorporate all these different groups. This was supposed to be protecting women to start. Okay. And now again, that movement's hijacked another, you know, piece of lawmaking that was supposed to help women, and now it's working against women, right?
That's why we're in this quagmire of Biden Harris. So that's a great point to bring up. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, no, when I was researching it, I didn't realize that, you know, they just did that in April of this year, and they had not yet worked a bylaw or worked around it to incorporate it into athletics in teams at school levels. So there's really – the schools are left in this void, right, because it doesn't pertain to the athletics. The school, San Jose State, is saying it does, I'm sure. They're saying, no, it doesn't. And actually they're right because there is no law how shall I say this? There's been no bylaw written under the original Title IX to incorporate the LGBT 3, 4, 10 into athletics on the teams. So that has to be decided too. And thank God with, you know, Donald Trump, that might be something that they can clarify and narrow down and get it back to what it used to be, you know, what it was meant for.
Bill. You're right. So let's look at the Title IX, some of the issues, because you're kind of alluding to it. So you're looking at Title IX violations, which is what you're talking about. It's a he said, she said right now. That's where the courts will come in and decide. And the schools have a lot to lose if this does not go their way. So the fact that they're sticking to their guns because of the political wind. The political winds, as you just said, are changing. So it's going to be interesting to see where they stand a month from now, 2 months. Either way, the damage is done already. These women aren't going to get these years of eligibility back. See, that's the thing about sports and college and taking it one step further with the puberty and the kids and all that development. These are years you don't get back. You know, so there's discrimination claims, again, the favoritism, retaliation charges is obvious by suspending her, the breach of ethical conduct, professional consequences for Kress, the head coach, if he's found to have acted unethically. So he has a lot to lose. And then obviously the NCAA violations, and most importantly, where it's going to cost him an arm and leg, the civil liability, as well as employment consequences. All this means big dollars. Big dollars. So there's two ways to look at this. They're entrenched. They have no choice but to keep fighting it now. Or do they make that 180 because of the winds of change, the political winds of change? I don't know. But what this has done, Bill, is create a team division. 90% of the team sides with Brooke Sessler, a beautiful young girl there, who is the co-captain, and the other three or four side with Blair Fleming. The point is there's team division. It's a miserable atmosphere. Read that Quillette article. It talks about how bad the atmosphere, the culture is, how the coach is indecisive. He's not a leader. People don't show up to practice. They just don't want to deal. It's a bad, bad atmosphere there. Oh, yeah, my next point, deteriorating atmosphere. And it has a winning record. They say winning cures everything, not in this case. The loss of a safe space. You know, the one thing is, going to a sports event as a team member, with practicing with the fellas, with it's a culture. It's like a safe space. You're with your brothers. That's gone. The conflicting on-court behavior, the external reactions, meaning what both Sessler, the assistant coach, and Fleming. I'm not defending either one. It's both sides are the outside world's chiming in, and it's affecting all sides here. I'm not on Fleming's side here, but she's being affected too. External reaction, the coach's perspective. Head coach Todd Kress acknowledged the unexpected nature of the situation, stating, "I don't think anybody saw this coming." Really? Are you serious? Are you really serious with that? Okay, so what's your thoughts on the team situation here, especially Coach Sessler? I mean, I'm sorry, not Coach Sessler. That's a girl's name. Coach Todd Kress.
Well, I mean, I feel very strongly he's not doing his job. Because when you're the head coach, every year you get a new team, you get new players, you know, and people move on. And part of your job as a coach is to bring everyone together and create a winning environment, both on and off the field, right? He's ignoring the problem, which is causing other issues for the other players on the team, right? So by not doing that, now you have the, you know, Title IX lawsuit and the assistant coach. Do you think that they work well together now? I doubt it. I mean, you know, now she's suspended, but how is she going to step back into that role if they lift the suspension and work with him? And
hold on, Bill. In his defense, it sounds like the school suspended her. Now, I don't know if he could have gone to them. Could he have gone to them and said, no, don't suspend her. I may not agree with her, but
she's caused him an indirect issue by doing it, right?
Yes,
so
correct.
Now he's not joining her and jumping on the bandwagon. He's staying on the outside. So now she's caused a problem for him, right, bringing this issue up, I'm assuming, because he's not joining the party. And, you know, it's his responsibility. So how are they going to work together? I don't know his relationship with the athletic department, but some of the athletic director and the associate athletic director, they might have two associate athletic directors. They should be sitting down in meetings saying, you got to work this out and get this situation straightened out. You know, let's say they're letting her play. It's more than that. It's getting the system and the program back on track so that you can work with both the girls on the team and the oddball on the team. I mean, I'm saying oddball, and I'm not saying it in a mean way, but she or he is an oddball. And you know, what I'm really tired about in sports, but in the world in general, is that the 19 players or the 18 players on the team, right? 17 of them need to change the way they are because of one. It's not the way it works. If you want to play volleyball,
driving the majority.
Yeah. If you want to play volleyball and you want to say you're a woman, okay, fine. That doesn't mean you get to be in the locker room. That doesn't mean that you get to get extra, you know, attention for something. You know, whatever it is, you know, if that's what you want to do, but you don't get to do everything else everybody does because you've given up something. Correct. To do something, right? You don't get both. You don't get both things, right? That's the problem with guys who think they're men. I mean, men who think they're women, is they're really not giving any, they're playing both sides, right? I mean, and not giving anything up. But so, you know, back to the coach, he's really responsible for this situation. You know, he knows, he knew, she helps the team win, which helps him. So, you know, he needs to lead. Coaches need to be leaders, and he's not leading here, and that's creating an even bigger problem for the university. So I wouldn't be surprised if he's gone eventually after this all plays out.
They will pay his contract, and they will eventually buy him out, I think, to settle all of this out. So before we move on, like I said, it's a he said, she said. So a lawyer, I would imagine, is probably somebody that's a friend of the school or a booster type, something like that, that wants to keep seeing the volleyball team winning. Because the volleyball team is dominating right now. So a lawyer advised head coach Todd Kress that Brooke Slusser, the female athlete, the co-captain, could face severe consequences for speaking out against a transgender teammate. Translation, she doesn't have her free speech rights, is really saying. And that happens sometimes with private organizations. You lose that. But he's saying that this is a loss, including losing her scholarship, removal from her captaincy, and dismissal from the team. This information was disclosed in that complaint. filed by Smoos against San Jose State. So in essence, she's presenting herself saying, hey, look, they want to take her out. So the people behind Kress and the school, they would see her taken out. She's not being taken out, Bill, per word on the street, my anonymous sources, which are about as good as the New York Times, just let the audience know. Sarcasm, people. Point being is, she's still the co-captain because he doesn't want the backlash. If he does something against Blair Fleming, you're anti-homo, trans, you're trans homophobic, you're this, that. And then if he does something against Sessler, oh, okay. You're against your own, the majority of your team. You're against girls who aren't transgender. You take it aside. So I'm not defending them, but he's kind of stuck in the middle. He's damned if he does, damned if he don't, which is good in this case. That protects Sessler. She's not a rich girl, to my knowledge. You know, she trashed there on scholarship. Your thoughts on the fact that somebody outside the team that wants that transgender playing told the coach, take her out. Because that's, in essence, what he's saying. You can take her out. Take her out.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's a violation of Title IX as it is. I mean, you know, that activity and that attitude and that strategy to remove her by threatening her and violating her as a female athlete from a male head coach, you know, via the, you know, attorney or whatever the case who's, you know, speaking out. So, I mean, it's a mess. Right. And that's where that coach needs to remember what his job is. Remember how he got there. Remember what he loved. I imagine he loves to coach. So remember that and, you know, foster that, you know, that love of what you're doing and get back to the nitty gritty and get the team together and lead. But he's not doing that and he's just sitting back. So I feel bad for the co-captain. Is her name Schlesinger or Schlesinger? What's her name?
Sessler.
Yeah, I mean, she's in a terrible position, right? I mean, she's actually brave in speaking out because you know what? She's a co-captain. What do captains do? They actually speak for the team. That's the way it's supposed to work. And then the coach is supposed to listen either to the captain or co-captain or an assistant coach gathers the information up from a coach, from a captain or co-captain or what, and then brings it to the coach. The whole system's broken down.
Correct. It is. It is. And out there is Schlesser, Brooke Schlesser.
Okay, got it.
Schlesser. Brooke Schlesser. She is a co-captain there. A cute girl. This is when I feel old, Bill. I look at him like, damn, that's a little girl. Oh, no, she's 22. You know, like, damn. cute girl. This has created a bad situation overall.
Yeah.
The coach, we don't know what the coach's true position is, but we do know this. He's not being much of a leader. He has not figured out how to resolve the situation because I believe he cares more about winning and he's hiding behind the school. And he's also hiding behind the Kamala Harris, Joe Biden version of Title IX. You know, so it's become a quagmire. This will be resolved sooner than later at this point. The winds of tide are changing culturally in America for the better. Look, if they're transgenders, I'm all for creating their own league. Go raise your money. Go sell tickets. Go build your own league. They tried that in either Oregon or Washington State, and it failed. You know why, Bill? I think I've told you this. You do know why. There's nobody signed up for the league. Men want to play against women. Thomas. It's like when I think of Leah Thomas now, I always crack myself up. Like I said, that's strong. We're back and forth and those poor girls.
But this is why, you know, when we talk politics, right, because you're this is up your alley too, right, along with many other things. But the election speaks to America and what America wants, right? And then the left will reject what the landslide says. So hopefully when this all gets ironed out and we have, you know, January 20th comes around, we can actually really start making some progress and redefining all of these issues, right? And put them a little bit more in the mainstream because they have their blindfolds on.
The transgender issue has become a political issue. And with that, Mr. Bill has the next word. So let's get on. I don't want to spend too much time. This is more of an update. Bill wasn't around at the time, and it was a different podcast, a Fired Up podcast. But this is more of a sports topic. It's a bit of an update. we first talked about it when the issue came up with the Olympics. And the name is boxer Iman Khalif. Iman Khalif. And for those of you who are not aware, I wanted to post this specific picture. That is him on the left, but that's a cute little girl on the right, isn't it? That's who he was. So the issue with Khalif was a report said a test had been done on him and he had XY chromosome and he was a man. Now, the International Olympic Committee said, well, we don't care what that test says. There's no proof, no doubt. We haven't seen tests, yada, yada, yada. But we have seen his passport, and it's a female passport, so that's good enough for us. Yeah, that's what it boiled down to. She said she was born a female, she was registered as a female, had a passport that said she was female. Good enough for the Olympic Committee, which is ironic. But before I move on, Bill, think about this. I want your opinion on this. They do testing for every time they carry drug in the Olympics. They have just taken medals away from people for drug testing.
Yep.
They can administer a test to figure out who's a man and who's a woman. Now, here's the dilemma, though, before you answer that is, there are some men and some women born the opposite gender but showing traits of the gender they claim to be. It's just sad. We are products of a gestation period. Sometimes things don't go right. And if for somebody who's gay, I always tell the world, hey, most people have hardtop cars. Some have convertibles. You, a gay person, is a convertible. You, the average person, is having the hardtop car. We're different. And that's how I view Iman Khalif. Iman Khalif is a man by all definitions. Yet, on the outside, she was, as you can see, a cute little girl born. But before we get into that, what are your thoughts on the damn International Olympic Committee? She got a passport, so she's a woman. Yeah. It's like, don't you think they can test for this?
Well, I mean, I hope this goes out the window with, you know, just like Harris did yesterday, because this is right up their alley, right? So, I mean, it's a joke. You know, it's like not having to have an ID to vote. It's pathetic. So I hope that gets, you know, rearranged and they get back onto what they're supposed to be doing. Because even though she looks like a beautiful little girl, as she grows and matures with the XY chromosome, I'm not a doctor. I don't know a lot about it, but I'm just saying as she grows and develops, if the testosterone levels are like a man or a male and she looks like a man there, then her sexual identity or what it has to change back to a man, right? As she gets older. You know,
well, the test, at least for competitive sports, yeah, they need a test for that.
No, of course, they have to test.
What you're saying is you're looking at a man's body. You're looking at a man's muscular development. You're looking at a sinewy arm, reach, stronger, more power, everything. That's what you're saying, I think. So let's talk about the test real quick. I'll get your comments on that. So it was a leaked medical report from June 2023. It's terrible, but I'm going to sit there and say what this is. It's terrible as a man, and it's your worst nightmare if you're a man. Iman Khalif has XY chromosomes, no uterus, and internal testicles. So inside, she's a man with testicles.
Yeah.
An MRI examination identified the presence of a micropenis in her anatomy, which looked like an engorged clitoris. Exactly, say clitoris. Her hormone tests show that Khalif's testosterone levels are within the range for typical males. Again, at puberty, she was developing as a man with the testosterone, thus the bone density, the muscular density, all of that, meaning when she hits with the power of a man, not a girl. And that's a big difference. And I want to make one note on this too, Bill, because it's politically related but indirectly related. Right now, there's a battle in America for the hearts and souls of our children. Parents who have no clue on being a parent are administering puberty blockers, which do the same thing. They suppress testosterone production, thus potentially limiting or halting the normal growth of the penis that typically occurs during puberty. You know, they are destroying the mental capacity of a man as he grows up and not becoming a man, yet being a man. They're doing the same thing with women, lopping off their breasts, you know, ripping out their uterus, meaning they can't have kids anymore. So this is part of this movement of allowing Iman Khalif to beat up women in the name of political correctness. We are destroying lives here. What are your thoughts? Okay, so these findings suggest that Khalif has a condition called 5-alpha reductase deficiency, which is a disorder of sexual development that only occurs in individuals with XY chromosomes. And this condition can cause babies to be incorrectly assigned as female at birth due to the ambiguous or deformed external genitalia. So what I'm trying to say is this is not Iman Khalif's fault, but at the end of the day, Iman Khalif should not be boxing against other women. That's what it boils down to. Iman Khalif was not given a fair shot at being either a man or a woman because of the way his, I don't even know I'll call her by a girl. She has both traits. But what I'm trying to tell the audience here, and I'm struggling with, is it's not Khalif's fault, but right. Khalif has no business boxing. The report should right. never have been leaked. It should have been dealt with privately with the authorities, by the authorities meaning the organizations and things like that, and kept it on the down low. You don't destroy or mock a human individual like that. That's what's depressing to me about this whole story.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts in terms of first the leaked document and then the results that we now have learned about that document?
Well, I mean, obviously, you know, privacy is important. It's unfortunate it was leaked, but then also at the same time, it does explain some things. Yes. You know, if I lose my eyesight, that might not be my fault. It might be some, you know, trait that I have and disease, but that doesn't mean I can go out and drive a freaking car.
Yeah, that's a good analogy.
I mean, that's right. What I'm saying, right? I mean, like, and I feel terrible for him because or her, or however she wants to identify, but it doesn't mean that she can go beat up women. I mean, because as you grow, you start to understand your body, right? Okay, I'm more like a man, the testosterone, I'm stronger and bigger. But the point is, I agree, it's not any fault of her own or his or her own, but it doesn't give her the right to then go and box or drive when you're blind or what, because life isn't fair. Shit happens all the time, you know, that isn't fair to people. But it doesn't mean that, you know, that you can go and get into a ring with women and, you know, throw them around and pummel them, you know, because you had that condition.
I agree.
So, yeah, it's unfortunate.
I will say this. So, Bill, that may not have been the best example to use.
What
I mean, the blind example.
Oh, wait a minute. That's a great show.
Matt Murdock can drive. And he's blind, Bill. He is blind, I tell you.
All right, well, okay, you know, so well, I'll use a different example tomorrow. It's just, you know, it came to mind. I'm sorry. But no, but, you know, hey, if you're a daredevil, then you can drive still. Come on.
There you go. Daredevil, for the audience, cannot see. He's like a bat, has that radar.
But then, you know the point that you're making on this is why it's hard to talk about sometimes is there are things that happen in life that aren't fair, then will close certain things that you can do, and then other things might open, right? So if we try to put everybody in a round hole or you know, the square peg in a round hole all the time, it doesn't work. Some people can't do things. Some people have had things happen that eliminate, you know, their chance or their opportunity to go do something else. So you have to find something else to do rather than beating up women in a boxing ring.
Right. You know, you're absolutely correct. We want to make the minority the majority at the expense of the actual majority. What I mean by that is we want to take one person with one issue and change the whole world around them. We can contort, we can tweak, we can do things, but we don't give up our own way of life for that. You know, we have to work within the boundaries, and you're absolutely right. This is clearly a case where Iman Khalif had no choice in how his life came about, biologically speaking, but there is a choice in whether he should or should not be boxing, and he should not be boxing. And that is now abundantly clear. I believe this madness the Western world is going through right now, as my relatives call it, first world problems, meaning we don't have problems, so we make up shit. You know? It wasn't long ago where every freaking celebrity, I was molested, your dad smacking you on the back of the head because you screwed up as a being molested, Oprah.
Yeah.
But my point is we just live in this world where madness reigns at times. And this is one, and this is not directly one of them, but this has become allowed because of the madness of that world. I wish Iman Khalif the best. She should not be boxing, but I hope she can find her way in life and what makes her happy, what fulfills her. But beating up other women is not the way to go. And I hope she realizes that. Turkish. Well, the sad thing is that's just it. It's catch 22. She's stronger than the average female, but biologically she won't match up to a male yet. So she's kind of stuck. Maybe she becomes a coach. Who knows? The sad thing is she's in Turkey, which is one of these nations where it's not the best place to be in her situation.
Right.
So hopefully this can resolve itself. We wish Iman Khalif the best. I keep saying Iman Khalif because that's her full name. But Iman, and much success and actually much love to her. So I hope she can find out her lot in life because everybody deserves that happiness, especially when your situation is not a making of your own. So Bill, let us move on. Let's have a little fun with our final segment here. It's an update. Bill and I had a great one of our top episodes for the points on the board, the young QBs and their development. I was on X, my favorite social media platform, and I fell into the group of like, the NFL has a quarterback development problem. It made me think, are teams not giving young quarterbacks enough time to develop? And are they too quick to bench them when they struggle? Yes and no. Depends on the quarterback, team, the culture, etc. So, and not the other side, quarterback development is not a universal problem, and some players are able to succeed early in their careers. Bill, some factors to consider: team expectations, supporting cast, college to NFL transition, individual talent and readiness to play on day one, and organizational stability. As a college guy who earned his way through college playing it, you may not have played in the majors, but you were in a culture of competition where only a select few are able to play. Factors to consider. Do you see anything that should be added to that or something that is overblown on that? And once again, to the audience, team expectations, meaning there's some teams may have unrealistic expectations of that player from the get-go. Jamarcus Russell, Anthony Richardson, they do not have the mindset nor the experience to play. Supporting cast, the Jets, they just suck. And trusting the QB out there. College to NFL transition. Trey Lance, going from North Dakota State. Carson Wentz, going from the small college, not necessarily having enough time to develop and adapt to the NFL style of play. Individual talent and readiness. Maybe some players just aren't as good. I'm trying to think of a quarterback. Vinny Testaverde, overall number one pick. Eventually became a starter, played 20 years, but was not the elite player and organizational stability, the Jets, that's where quarterbacks get drafted to die.
Cleveland Brown at one point too, they go there to die too.
Seven teams, that's right. The Browns, I mean, they've had like 30 some odd starting quarterbacks since like the turn of the century. Your thoughts, am I leaving something out, and what are your thoughts on the topics there?
No, I mean, all of those things matter, right? The other big part of it is what's the system that the team runs, right? Because a lot of times someone looks really good in college, in whatever that system is they're running in college, but they don't have to go through the reads that you have to go through the NFL. And the play calling and changing is simplified compared to the NFL, right? But what team's going to draft you and what system do they run is really important. And then do they have the personnel?
Let me ask you this. Because you're right. I agree. We're not going to talk about this player, but I just want to bring this example.
Yeah.
What do you do with a player? If you were a head coach, what would you do with a player like RG3? He came – he was in a run and shoot, and he was a runner, a track star. So he would take off running. He blew up the stats. Obviously, a system built to throw it up. He came from Baylor, mediocre talent in terms of around him. He was a man amongst boys. Schedule much easier. He got Baylor ranked in the top 10 or so, but they were really a powder puff team. They weren't an elite team. His ability just made them look elite. Comes to the NFL. He's not a dropback quarterback. They build an offense around him to where he can use his mobility. Then he gets a hair up his tush. I'm a dropback quarterback. And Mike Shanahan says, no, you're not. We could teach you to be a dropback quarterback, but it's going to take a few years. So you need to follow what we're doing. He says no, goes to the owner. Owner fires Shanahan. RG3 gets injured. His career becomes a joke, a literally laughing joke.
Yep.
What about a player like that? How do you deal with a player like that?
Well, you know, I know they do a lot of psychological testing and interviewing, and I would hope that in that process you would find out some information about the individual and how he conducts himself, that you might get a, you might get some of that input before that happens after you draft him. But you need to be on the same page with the owner. I mean, the guy, you have to sit him down. And then management has to be on the same page too. If they're not, if the management is not on the same page with you, GM, owner, the whole deal, right? And you want to discipline a player like that, the coach is in a hard spot and you're probably going to end up disappearing like what happened to Shanahan, which isn't what should happen. But it tells you a lot about RJ3, right, too, right? I mean,
oh yeah,
that's ridiculous. You know, he felt pretty good about himself at Baylor coming out, obviously. But, yeah, I mean, you can't really do much unless you're on the same page with the owner, the GM, and the other coaches, and to corral him and put him in his place. You know, they need to be put in their place sometimes.
I agree. All right. So let's get to it, Mr. Bill.
And if you can't, then you trade him quickly before anybody else figures it out. You know,
it was terrible. RG3's injury just devastated his career. He was never the same. And because he never learned to be a dropback quarterback, because of his own doing, you know, throwing the guy off the team. And then he got a coach at Jay Gruden who said, I'm going to run my office. I want to win. I'm not here to cater to you, pretty boy. You know, and sure enough, they ran him out of town. They both ran one another out of town.
Yeah,
so, okay.
But.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say the system's really important, but as I was looking through some statistics, some of these young guys, if you look at a number of sacks that their offensive line is allowed, that's one of the most important pieces of the puzzle. And can they move a little bit, right?
So the supporting cast is what you're saying.
Yeah, so the offensive line, if you look at the statistics this year, you know, a guy like – Bo Nix and Daniels for Washington, they have a fairly good ratio. Daniels has a good TD to interception ratio, and isn't sacked as often. And that, to me, the number one thing is, you know, you want to be able to run the ball a little bit, that you have a good offensive line if you're doing that. But if you can protect them, they have a better chance of success and long-term success. They don't get touched as much. They don't have as many injuries. They don't have to run the ball in panic mode. So they're not susceptible to a hit from nowhere that can, you know, end right. their season. It gives them time to adapt to the speed of the game and grow within themselves in the game, on the team. And then in the future, be even more successful. If you could put the best rookie quarterback in the world on a team that has no offensive line, and it's going to be a mess. So, I think that's one of the most important parts of the puzzle. And, you know, then you have to have coaches, and all of it has to work together. But if you look at a guy like Daniels on Washington, they're having success because he can move a little bit. He's a really good athlete. They have a very good offensive line. He's only been sacked, like, I think, 14 times so far this year. So that he has a good – he's smart. It gives him time to read and make adjustments. He has his interception to touchdown to interception ratio is really good, and he can run. So when there's an old stat that was just for basically it was, you know, interceptions, touchdowns, interceptions, the QB rating, right? It basically, right. The QB, in, you know, 106, 110. If you're over 100, it's actually, you know, it's a good, you had a good game. But with him, there's a new stat where they take in, you know, running, penalties, your impact on the overall game, right? And
right.
He scores high on that. But what allows him to do that is he has time.
That's true. That's so true. I think that
to me, that's the most important part of it. You know, you have to have people who can catch. That's obvious, right? But the offensive line gives him right out of the gate, if he's going to start right away, the offensive line is the first place to look.
I agree. That's always been my take, the offensive line. All right. So let's look at some bench players currently bench. Now, I'm going to have a caveat on this one. He's a rookie, but Anthony Richardson, 22 years of age with the Colts. Bryce Young just got his starting job back because of an injury to Andy Dalton, but he may keep it. But he was benched, 23. He looked terrible for 19 games before they benched him. Trey Lance, 49ers Cowboys, lost his job to injury, but was not playing at the skill level they thought. Not necessarily in the games, but what they were seeing in practice. They were seeing the kid who just was not developing. Dak Prescott just got hurt. They brought in Cooper Rush. They're talking about, no, Trey Lance isn't even in the talk. Fanboys don't like it, but that's just how life works. Justin Fields went to Chicago, is known as being a bit arrogant, condescending, a bit of a diva. Chicago traded him to Pittsburgh. Started out with the Steelers 4-2. It was obvious if you watch the games, it was not because of him. It was because of the defense. In his defense, he did not lose games. Regardless, he got benched. They got Russell Wilson, who's proven to be the better quarterback. Mm-hmm. Will Levis, Titans, 25. He just looks terrible. Zach Wilson, he went to the Jets. What Bill was talking about, the organizational issue. He's with the Broncos now, the number two role. He'll be there for a year. Somebody will pick him up next year, see if they can develop, and we'll find out. Mac Jones, he's with Jaguars. It's not like Trevor Lawrence is lighting it up, but that's their multi-billion-dollar quarterback. Mac Jones is going to end up moving on from Jacksonville after being traded by the Patriots. And then Kenny Pickett, who just looked terrible for over a year. Those are your players who are bench. Ages, 22, 23, Lance, 24, Fields, 25, Levis, 25, Wilson, 25, Jones, 26, Pickett, 26. These guys should be hitting their peak in a couple years. Obviously, Anthony Richardson is extremely young. On average, you're looking at about 24 for quarterback start. So he just has to keep from getting injured. Those are your bench players. I was like, yeah. Keep reading about my mental problem. You look at Alice Bill. Let's not look ahead right now, but just looking at Alice alone. If you look at Alice, what would you say? Developmental problem or, you know, it's more than that. What would be your thoughts?
Who are we looking at right there?
In general, any of those players.
Oh, okay.
Looking at that batch of players, would you go, yeah, they just suck. They're too young. They're just not ready for the pros. Or, yeah, they need to be developed.
Well,
I think, if you want.
My first answer to that is anybody coming out of college needs to be developed to play in the NFL, right? It's not the same. It's a faster game. So you need to have some development. Now, that might be on the field development and in the, you know, film room with the coaches and whatnot. But, you know, for the most part, these guys, you know, they shouldn't be thrown. When you drafted a quarterback in the old days, he was behind a starter that you already had, and there was patience before that. So let's take Love for example, right? He sat behind.
Let's focus on the players we got there on the list.
Okay,
the
got it.
Section.
I don't think they're that good. I think a lot of them are. You know, they're just. Yeah. If I were looking at them, They wouldn't be my picks, or they wouldn't have been my pick to draft or whatnot, right? I mean, it's hard to find a quarterback. So once a guy like Richardson starts getting hurt, he's gone, done. That's going to keep happening his whole career because he's good because he can move around, right? But if he gets hurt, he can't do it anymore. So he's done. Bryce Young's too small. He throws on his tiptoes. So he's done. Trey Lance never showed anybody anything other than what he did in college.
Justin Fields, and he was in North Dakota State. So he was playing elite ball for his skills with average players.
And sometimes scouts get like they oh, look at this special guy, and they overthink it, right? But then and they fail to see who they're playing. So anyways, I don't think – and Mac Jones, he played for Alabama, if I'm not mistaken, right? He never was anything special. So to think that he'd come in and be a starter to turn your program around, I mean, that's just overestimating him as a, you know, as a quarterback in the NFL, right? And, you know, Kenny Pickett, I mean, the same thing, nothing special to me.
What about Zach Wilson and Will Levis and Justin Fields? What do you think of those two?
I mean, Justin Fields to me is another failed Ohio State quarterback. There's a bunch of them. He's one of them. You can't just run in the NFL. In college, you can run around and throw the ball up in the air and someone's going to catch you. On Ohio State, right?
Well, Alabama too.
You have to really do your scouting to see what they're doing in certain situations and see if it, you know, can overlap into the NFL. But And then Zach Wilson, you know, wow. I mean, BYU, athletic, just there's something not working with him. I think, like, it came easy to him. I don't get his, you know, I don't get the fact that why he's so unsuccessful, but there's something up here that's getting in his way. And, you know, you have to identify that too. So.
Yeah, and regarding Ohio State, Brandon Whedon, Mason Rudolph, Zach Robinson, Josh Fields, Tony Lindsay, Clint Schauf, J.W. Walsh. These are all failed quarterbacks that, yep. that played on that team, that started on that team.
Yeah.
All right. So you're saying most of these players here on this list aren't good. It's not a lack of a development problem. They're just not good. I don't disagree. I think some of them is because of the culture, bad team, sure. Like the Jets. Look at Joe Flacco. Obviously, he was a Super Bowl champion and I believe MVP with the Baltimore Ravens. But yeah. Then he went to the Jets and died. I mean, he was terrible, horrible. Yeah. Then he went to Cleveland and took him to the playoffs.
Yeah.
He went to Indianapolis. All of a sudden, they're competitive. They can play to win now. So I look at the Jets as it's a culture issue. It's a lack of organizational stability. Yes. So he, out of that list, I think Justin Fields could do something if his ego would get out of the way and they would sit him for a couple years to learn. But outside of that, you know, Richardson to me is a long term. I mean, I'm talking about, you're looking at a 5-year project. About Jordan Love, which we're going to get to in a second here, but even Jordan Love was different than him. Richardson is just so young, so raw, barely played in college, and he's injury prone because he's a big voice, so he wants to tuck the ball and run. And his body's still not fully developed internally, thus the injuries. He's a man playing amongst boys. He's going to end his career through injury if he keeps playing as he's going. So I agree with you pretty much. I do think some can be developed. But let's look at some of the current starters.
Sure.
I grade out the rookies. It's still too early. Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, and Bo Nix. They're all rookies. They're looking good the first half of the season. You know, C.J. Stroud has come back down to earth this season because there's film on him. Brian Flores showed how you play him. You blitz him. But that said, C.J. Stroud with the Texans, he's 23. He is a starter. He is somebody who you look at, hey, this kid can play in the league. Brock Purdy, 49ers, came in as a rookie. Mr. Irrelevant. Trevor Lawrence has been playing like a dog based on where he was picked. But he's playing good enough to be an NFL quarterback in the lower tier, I believe. But good enough. Jordan Love sat on the bench for 5 years, developed behind Aaron Rodgers. He's playing lights out when he's not hurt. Jalen Hurts, he's a little raw still. He had that magical year last year, but he's still somebody that's a threat, can play in the league. Justin Herbert, obviously, I think he's a little soft. The team, you know, but the guy has talent and ability and is clearly an NFL quarterback. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. I say he's a little soft because he hasn't shown me he can put the team on his back, but he can sling it and throw those numbers. He's kind of like Kirk Cousins. Maybe more raw talent than Kirk Cousins.
Yep.
But in terms of wins and losses and ability to put a team on the back, there's still questions. Tua Tagovailoa, he can run Mike Daniels' offense, but he wins against cream puffs, gets shellacked against the better teams. He hasn't shown me he's a pure play NFL starter who can take a team. He can make the team competitive, so I guess maybe he is. Joe Burrow, I think his head coach is bringing him down. Obviously a naturally talented kid. Former Ohio State guy who got beat out, I think, by Justin Fields. No, the kid's dead. He's dead now.
Oh, boy.
Haskins. Dwayne Haskins.
Yeah.
Kyler Murray's a shrimp. I think he's playing on borrowed time. But when he's healthy, he has the mojo. The problem is he's too small in my eyes. And Lamar Jackson, he can play in the league. But this, I was arguing with Big John. I said, look, Big John, I get it. You're saying he's this, he's that, and I agree. He's that in the regular season, but the man's as accurate in trying to hit the side of a barn as a gangbanger who puts the gun this way. Shoots his gun that way. You know? His accuracy, that's why his playoff record sucks. The guy can't hit the side of a barn to save his life because when you're playing the elite teams, you got to be able to drop in the pocket and throw the ball more than once.
Yep.
They're going to game plan your legs. You know, so each one of these QBs I just mentioned, they are starters. They can't start. They are playing and starting for teams. So I concede the point they can't play in the NFL. Their age, Stroud, 23, Purdy, 24, Lawrence, 24, Love, 25, Hurts, 26, Herbert, 26, Tagovailoa, 26, Burrow, 27, Murray, 27, Lamar Jackson, 27. All of these guys on average are about a year older than most of the players in the bench list. But that said, these teams can play in the NFL, how good they can become is still up for debate. But out of these guys, is it talent or organizational ability that you're looking
well,
at?
Well, you know, it's interesting because on the starters list, you know, Daniels and Bo Nix are the two that are sacked the least in the league, right? So they have, you know, the line, the offensive line that we were talking about. Williams is sacked the second most, and the one right behind him is Stroud. So, I mean, you know, there's a problem there, right? Stroud's having an issue this year because it's either he's not reading the blitzes well enough or their line's not playing well enough. And he's running around. What's that?
Well, I'm sorry. I finished your thought, but I wanted to cut in based on what you just said.
Oh, yeah. So, anyways, those guys are getting sacked a lot, right? Daniels is my number one pick because he's playing probably better than all of them and not getting sacked a lot. Seems to know the game. Seems to make the right plays. Just has sort of that it factor for me. You know, like even on the Hail Mary, you know, I mean, it's just he ran around enough. He stayed out of it and he launched it when he wanted to. He let him get down there. It just worked, but he just has it, right?
And the organization's improving. Now, Jaden Daniels is special.
Yeah.
Not only is he special on the field, the kid is a class act. You know, when they talk race, I'm like, Jaden Daniels has a huge following because he's a class act. He knows how to carry himself. He carries himself like a man. He's a leader on that field as young as he is, and he's smart cerebrally. And that's not saying black quarterbacks are dumb or white quarterbacks are dumb. It's youth. He is showing maturity level that you don't see in veterans. Now, and my point in saying that is he's like Russell Wilson when Russell Wilson first came out. He knows how to use his legs to buy time to throw the ball. Caleb Williams and C.J. Stroud, two of the most sacked quarterbacks. I've watched – multiple games. I'm not a big time watcher like I used to be when I had my company. But those guys love to hold on to the ball.
Oh yeah.
Love to hold on. So they are attributing to their own sack issues. And Stroud, that's new for him. The problem is teams are starting to figure him out. So he's struggling a bit. He'll rebound. Kid's too smart. Not to learn from it. But I think those are the sack issues. Let me ask you this. I look at Brock Purdy and he's a rarity. He played for 4 years in college. Most of these players that we mentioned, 3 years. And some of them, if not two, you know, a couple of them, I don't know how many are two. Most of them are 3 years. And then they declare. He played for not a major college, Iowa Cyclones, had 4 years of actual football. He was able to learn the game and the nuances of the game. And I think you add that with organizational stability and a supporting cast. Perfect fit. He's what I call a game manager who's learning how to put the team on his back to win the game. So I think he's in the perfect situation. Trevor Lawrence to me is a disgusting disappointment. I say disgusting because you're like, dude, what are you doing? This is your fourth year in the league. You're making mistakes as if it's you too. In his defense, I just think that team is a mess. I think he will succeed when he goes to a different team.
Who's this you're talking about?
Trevor Lawrence.
Oh, yeah. He's a disappointment. Yeah, but the whole team's a mess, like you said.
Exactly. Hurts. I think he's raw. Herbert, he needs to learn how to win and put a team on his back. And I think Jim Harbaugh will do that. Burrow, he needs to get out of Cincinnati. He's going to die. Their Super Bowl year was a fluke. The head coach, they don't have organizational stability there in my eyes, and they don't have – the supporting cast. They have his two receivers, but if he doesn't have time to throw and then his defense can't stop a freaking seed, and they're like a seed, you know, he's going to struggle. Murray's too small for me. But I can be honest, they're a head coach. I love what they're doing. So maybe Murray can prove me wrong. Lamar Jackson, I think I give him 1 to 2 more years. If he does not develop as a passer, he's done. He's done. Yeah. At age 27, he's got a lot of wear and tear, because he came out young too. He's got a lot of wear and tear.
He's not accurate enough.
So what are your thoughts in terms of any issues with my thoughts on these guys?
No, I mean, Brock Purdy might never see a Super Bowl again, right? I mean, because you're 4-4 this year. He's not going to bring you to a Super Bowl, but he'll manage a game like Trent Dilfer did for the Ravens. When they had a great defense and all he needed to do was not make mistakes, right? In they had McCaffrey, but now all of a sudden McCaffrey's hurt. They've had some other injuries. They're 4-4. So he's not gonna, you know, he's not gonna win games for you on his own. So that might have been a one and done for him too. I mean, people are already whispering out, you know, up there that is he the guy? I mean, you know, they don't know because it's not only his fault they're 4-4, but so he, I'm not sold on him. Like, I wouldn't take him for my team. That he wouldn't be the first guy that I would look at unless I had that team the 49ers had. And they might not have that team as they had last year around. So it, that might be it for him. Trevor Lawrence is a disappointment. Jalen Hurts, you know, they had one great year. He signs a gigantic contract. I know he's in the weight room all the time, but, you know, he has to do it year after year, right, to make it worthwhile and you know, for it to pay off. Too many concussions already, you know, whether you think he can lead a team or not. I mean, he's probably not going to be playing much longer. I agree with Murray. He's too small, though I like what they're doing with him. He's trying to use his, you know, his talent on the field the best way they can. But it goes to show how hard it is to pick a quarterback. I mean, look at Tom Brady. Tom Brady, the GOAT, right? The greatest of all time. If he didn't go to the Patriots and Drew and Bledsoe didn't get hurt, we might not even know who Tom Brady is right now.
It's like Joe Montana. If Joe Montana had not been drafted by the 49ers, we may not know who he is.
Well, that's right. I mean, that's the way it happens, right? I mean, and then you have – then you look back and it's the organization, it's the coaching, it's the players, you know, it all comes together and they go on a run, right? So, you know, look at Phil Simms coming out of Moorhead State.
Yeah, you're right. I agree. Jeff Hostetler, who beat him out, who came out of West Virginia, if I'm correct. Yep. So they weren't really colleges. And to make it even tougher on those guys, they had to deal with the New York media. Okay, Bill. So Anthony Richardson, Bryce Young, Trey Lance, Justin Fields, Will Levis, Zach Wilson, Mac Jones, Kenny Pickett. Give me your top three out of those that are currently benched or struggling that will actually break through and succeed. And then give me your bottom three that you think will fail, will bust out.
Out of those three. Okay. So I'm gonna give Zach Wilson a chance. I'll go with Anthony Richardson because he's so young. And I'll try to get him to stay in the pocket, not run as much. Boy, that's difficult. I'll still stay with Bryce Young, I guess. But the bottom three are pretty easy. Mac Jones, Trey Lance, and Will Levis for me.
So you think Will Levis is eventually going to be a backup material only? Fair enough.
Yeah, because, you know, he's an interesting guy. He came from Kentucky, right, if I'm not mistaken. So, you know, Kentucky starts playing better when he's the quarterback, right? Kentucky's notoriously terrible, right? So all of a sudden, someone who's running around scouting sees Kentucky having a good season, and, oh, Will Levis is the quarterback. He's an athlete. I'm not saying that he's not. But he needs to be, you know, he's gotten sacked a lot. More three plus a game he was getting sacked. He holds it, doesn't read it, makes too many, throws too many interceptions. So, you know, I just think someone, he's really helping Kentucky. You know, he's very athletic, like his arm, and, you know, he's just not doing it at the NFL level.
I agree. Okay, so my bottom three would be Anthony Richardson. I just think he's going to get injured himself out of the league, and he's too young, too raw. His body's still developing. See, here's something I learned from doctors. Nobody ever talks about. The male body does not stop developing until you're right around your 28, right there internally. At 22, he may take too much of a beating before his body has a chance to finish developing. But we'll see. Bryce Young, I just think he's too small. He doesn't have the bone structure density to get big to become NFL size. And Kenny Pickett, that's an easy pick. As far as those who succeed, I don't know. I'm going to sit there and say they can succeed. Maybe it's quality backups that have long tenures because they can come into a game, a Brissett type quarterback, you know.
Yeah.
You know, and that's Zach Wilson and Mac Jones. I just haven't seen enough of them on a good team to determine that. Your current starters, not counting the Williams, Daniels, or Knicks, the rest of them, who are going to become Who will become, do you see, taking their team to a Super Bowl? Not necessarily winning, but being enough of a leader, enough of a strong quarterback to be able to take their team to a Super Bowl. Give me your top three of those.
Well, Jordan Love, obviously, is one. I think Justin Herbert is now with the right coach and the team. They're running and their defense is better, so I think he's one of them. I understand what you're saying about him, but he's not throwing it as much and doesn't need to. So I think that that's really makes him very dangerous. Justin Herbert.
Oh, yeah. Justin Herbert, I think he just needs to learn how to win. That's all.
Yeah,
He's got the talent.
And Harbaugh's running more. They're deep. So I think him. And then, Joe Burrow, obviously, those would be my three.
Gotcha. Mine would be Stroud, Purdy, and Love. And the reason I say those three is because of the team around them. Other players are more talented. Burrow's more talented. Kyler Murray, he's a 2-foot dynamo. The guy's super.
So are we sitting now? Wait a minute. Are we saying who we want as a quarterback or with the team they're on?
Oh, just looking
the team
at the list.
On. Okay, got it.
Looking at this list, which three do you think will could take their team to the Super Bowl? And I say those three because of the team, actually.
Yeah.
So, for example, Joe Burrow has the talent more so than Purdy, but he's on a mess of a team, I think.
So if I were looking at it that way, I would remove him because of the Bengals, right? I'd leave Love and Herbert, and I would probably go to Stroud and replace him with Stroud because of where he is and what they did last year, and I think that they're going in the right direction.
You know, and I cannot argue Herbert because I keep saying, hey, look, Harbaugh can turn that team around, but I guess if I had to put money, I'd say no, but I think if anybody can turn that team around, it's Harbaugh. And there you have it, my friends. There you have it. Go ahead, Bill. You get the last.
Oh, they're 5-3, looking strong after 8 games. So we'll see.
Oh, you're talking about the Powder Puff Chargers?
Oh yeah, that's for next week.
All right. So everybody, that's our show. I hope you enjoyed the reality, some ugly truths with San Jose State University, the transgender issue. How the winds of change are starting to happen. Something will be resolved with all of this transgender mess, I think, in the next 1 to 2 years. Halif, we all feel bad for her. It is what it is for Iman Halif. We hope that gets resolved. It's an ugly truth in terms of what's happened to her, not her fault. So let's hope for the best. And I hope you enjoyed our young QB mini debate. We tend to agree more than actually disagree. But we do agree on this. It really is a supporting cast. Bill was really hard on that in the sense that's what he believes, and I agree with him. I will add in the organizational stability. I don't know why, but Bill said Cleveland, I say the Jets. I agree. They're both cultures where quarterbacks go to die, whether you're drafted or a free agent. And if you are a free agent and you go and do well, they ship your ass out. Joe Flacco with Cleveland, you know? So do not forget. This is Points on the Board, where sports and politics intersect. But if you like basketball and just want to hear about basketball, check out our Buzzer Beaters report. If you like football and just want to hear about football, check out our Blindside Blitz. We're going to have hockey or baseball coming up soon. When, we're not quite sure. But we do have a pop culture podcast where politics and pop culture collide. And I call that the Red, White, and Rude podcast. And this week, we have Bill's beautiful young daughter, Natalie Ross, coming on. If you are single, you want to gain some dating tips on how to date a conservative woman, she's going to be on hand to answer questions and tune in. And from what I hear, she's looking for a husband, gentlemen.
They have to come to me first.
There you go. So you can check all of these podcasts out at grumbliesmedia.com, as well as our social media platforms such as Rumble, YouTube, Apple, Spotify, ePandora. And before I let y'all go, do not forget to like, share, and more importantly, subscribe for Mr. Bill Ross. I am William Del Pilar, and until next week, this is Points on the Board.